Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, on a mission to create remodeling experiences worthy of 5-star online reviews. See the difference at callmosby.com.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. As House Majority Leader, State Representative Alex Riley of Springfield has the great power and great responsibility of deciding which bills get debated in his chamber. And this time next year, Riley will likely become one of the most powerful political figures in Missouri state government when he becomes the Speaker of the Missouri House. Before he gets to that point, though, Riley will need to get through a 2026 legislative session that could be defined by a tough budgetary situation and potential roadblocks in the Missouri Senate. And it's also unclear just how large the GOP House majority will be, given national polling showing a sharp downturn in fortune for Republicans. Riley joins us from Springfield to talk about his legislative philosophy and how he sees the rest of the year going for Missouri House Republicans. Leader Riley, welcome to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much for having me.
Before we talk about issues and politics, tell us a little bit about yourself. Who is Alex Riley, and how did he get involved in Missouri politics?
Yeah, I appreciate that. So I am an attorney here in Springfield. I do a lot of work with businesses, business owners, people who want to start businesses, and really help them navigate every step of the legal process. More importantly than that, though, my favorite hat that I wear is I'm a dad. I've got 4 little kids. I've got a 6-year-old boy, a 5-year-old girl, a 3-year-old boy, and then a new-ish 4-month-old little girl.
I was gonna make some sort of joke about how having 4 kids is probably like wrangling legislative votes, but does that fact that you have lots and lots of kids make you well suited to be Speaker of the House?
You know, it's kind of funny because there is some overlap in the skill set. You know, the way some legislators can react sometimes can look a little bit like toddlers. So I do think there is some overlap there.
I don't think you had any competition when you were like seeking out the speakership. You kind of were elevated by acclamation. Is that correct? Or was this like a bruising process to get here?
So you are correct. At one point in time, there was another person who was looking at it. He ended up deciding to do something different. So for me, a lot of it, I think, was because I spent a lot of time building relationships with every faction within the House Republican caucus. And as you know, we have a lot. It's not really true that we just have a Republican supermajority, where everyone thinks the same and votes the same way. We really have more like 4 or 5 or 6 different factions that see the world very differently. And for me, what I wanted to do was focus on bringing those factions together as much as I can around the shared policy goals that we have. Because even as different as the factions in the House are, and as different as the different parts of the state are geographically, we all have things in common, and I wanted to focus on those things that we have in common, working towards getting those policies done. And that was something that the caucus appreciated. And I think the results sort of speak for themselves at this point.
So let's talk about the current legislative session. We talked about Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe's income tax plan in the prior segment. That proposal is being shepherded by House Speaker John Patterson. My understanding is there was a new version of this ballot proposal that was recently put forward that's different from the one that a lot of people saw after the State of the State. Do you think that the end result will ultimately mirror what Kehoe talked about in his speech, which means a 5-year phase out, triggers that will stop the phase out if revenue declines, and perhaps some carve outs to expanding the sales tax meaning that it wouldn't be applied to things like agriculture, healthcare, or real estate.
I do. In broad strokes, I do think that's where we end up. As far as the exact legislation that's been filed, I do think it's going to look different by the time it makes it all the way through the process. The legislative process is supposed to be hard. It's supposed to have lots of diverse viewpoints that are represented and have those views taken into account as much as they can. So I think there's going to be changes to those bills as they go through committee and as they go onto the floor of the House and ultimately work their way through the Senate too. So I think broadly speaking, it's going to end up something like what the governor has talked about in his State of the State address. But I do think the exact language will look different than what's been filed so far.
We actually asked the governor about what sort of thing Missouri has that would generate a lot of revenue if the income tax went away. He said tourism. And look, I like going to Branson as much as everybody else. I like Lake of the Ozarks, too. Would you concede, though, that those type of destinations are not nearly as big of draws as places like Florida or Nevada or even Tennessee? Missouri just may not have that thing that could attract a lot of revenue like those other states.
I would agree to a point that we don't have the same tourism draws as Florida and California. California is not a no income tax state, but we certainly don't have the same tourism draws as other parts of the country. At the same time, one of the things that we do have that's different that makes us strong and that I think helps makes this work is we have a very diverse economy. We aren't as dependent on one particular thing. We have a manufacturing base. We have a strong services sector. We have a strong agriculture sector. We have a lot of things that help make our economy diverse and strong. And I think that will help, too.
One of the reasons why expectations for the 2026 session are frankly kind of low is that Senate Democrats may try to slow the process down even on non-controversial measures. We saw that this week when they were filibustering gubernatorial nominees. Will that make it more difficult to pass things like the income tax plan we've talked about, or even things that are not overtly controversial but may be used as leverage? Because Democrats and the Senate are still very upset that debate was cut off so much, both in the regular and special sessions last year.
Yeah, I do think that is likely. One thing I would note from my perspective, policy debates are absolutely fair game. Republicans and Democrats, and as we've talked about, different factions within the Republican parties and the Democrat Party see the world very differently when it comes to policy and what they think is the best thing for the state and for their constituents. What I hope we don't see, and I think will be nothing but damaging for the state, is if you see people holding up non-controversial, overwhelmingly bipartisan things for their own political advantage. That's what concerns me the most. And I hope once we get through these first few weeks of session, or maybe even the first couple of months of session, as we're trying to work through the bumps and navigate some of those past hurt feelings, which I understand and respect, I would just want to make sure that there is a group that is willing to govern and do the things that we need to do to make our state grow and thrive. And when we have bipartisan things, especially things that we just all agree, hey, we need to do this, all say, you know, we're working on bills right now in the House on sex trafficking, which is a big problem across the state of Missouri, certainly along the I-44 corridor, which attaches, you know, my hometown of Springfield to yours there in St. Louis, that we can set aside some of the partisan bickering to work together on those types of things to help the people in our state.
So there is a political role to being the speaker designee. You basically are responsible for making sure the House Republicans have a good election night this November. And I'm going to criticize journalist prognosticators in Missouri, including myself. There's been predictions for years that the GOP would lose their supermajority in the House only for Democratic gains to be minimal or non-existent. But if it is a very bad election year for Republicans nationally, and at this point in time, which is I guess, January 23rd, 2026. The polls are not looking great for Republicans nationally. Is it possible this is a year where your caucus does not come out election night unscathed and you might lose a few seats just because the national environment swings back toward the Democrats?
I think every single year, to your point, we hear prognostications that the Republicans are going to lose seats and sometimes large numbers of seats in the House of Representatives and even in the Senate, too, including even last year when, I mean, as late as September and October, folks, including some in the minority party leadership, were talking that they thought that we were going to, as we as Republicans, were going to lose 5+ seats. And then we ended up coming into the session with the exact same number of representatives as we did in the prior General Assembly. So I think at this point, it's really too early to say which way the cycle is going to go. I will say from my perspective, we have a very strong bench of incoming candidates. We have really strong candidates in a lot of the swing districts, whether it's the St. Louis suburban area, the Kansas City suburban area, or here in Springfield. We have some really strong candidates. Our fundraising has been stronger than it's been for a very long time. So without question, there are going to be things that happen at the national level that we can't control and that will absolutely have an impact on elections here in Missouri. But as far as the things that we can control with our candidate recruitment, with our fundraising, we are far and above where we have been in the past at this point in an election cycle. So I think going in, we are well positioned.
The big things on the ballot are going to be these ballot initiatives that Republicans have put forward. You have this proposal that would repeal much of an abortion rights initiative that voters approved in 2024. You have another measure that would restrict constitutional amendments that are put forward to the voters through the initiative petition process. You may have this income tax plan that's put up for a vote. You may have the congressional map that you all passed in the special session go up for a referendum. I got to go back to the national environment again, though, because you may run the best campaigns for all those things I just mentioned, but they could all be brought down if Democratic turnout is high because it's a midterm election under a Republican president. Is that a fair thing to assume, that it's not going to be easy to pass any of these things if it is not a great year overall for Republicans nationally?
Absolutely. I don't disagree with that assessment at all. I think that right now, and understandably so, you do see a high level of Democrat enthusiasm for showing up at the polls and voting. And so, yes, I think that's true. Without some really compelling thing at the top of the ballot that will drive out Republican turnout, that is going to be a tricky dynamic for us that we're going to have to navigate. And we've done that before. We've had plenty of other tricky election cycles, and like we've talked about, how we've overperformed in those. But yes, you are correct. That is a tricky dynamic for us.
State Representative Alex Riley serves as Missouri's House Majority Leader and is slated to become Speaker of the Missouri House next year. Representative Riley, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Today's episode was produced by Jason Rosenbaum.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.